Thank you, Rob. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, it's time to reload this week's news. 312-981-7200. This is how we do it. We do biggest, winners, losers, overreported, underreported. Which stories took us down the rabbit hole, and which story's going to be remembered from this week in 5, 10, 50, 500 years from this week? There's a lot to choose from. In studio tonight, the dynamic duo, Amara Enya and Mario Smith. Amara, longtime activist and one-time mayoral candidate. Mario Smith, who is a longtime journalist. And
rabble-rouser.
And rabble-rouser and broadcaster and poet.
Yep.
It was fun to have to talk Love Jones on the show. I thought about you back in the day.
Man. Tim Witcher, it all started at Spices on Chicago and Franklin.
He was talking about Spices. Yeah.
Yeah, man. It was good to see. I actually had Ted on my show, so it was real cool to be able to chit-chat with him.
News from the service centrist on Lumpin'.
Yeah, man.
You do a lot of stuff at Promontory. We'll get to all that stuff coming up.
Right on.
All right, so let's get to it. 312-981-7200. All right, so big stories. A lot of weeks it's easy to pick. This week there are two that we're kind of divided on and two that obviously are important but are totally different. Mm-hmm. Amara, what do you got for biggest news story of the week?
So I had my biggest news story of the week was what is happening in Puerto Rico, both with the storms as well as the disaster relief efforts. Big development was the waiver of the Jones Act, mm-hmm. so that was a huge deal from my standpoint anyway.
That's such an interesting story because I didn't know anything about, nobody knows about the Jones Act, and nobody knows that it was waived for Houston and waived for Florida and not waived at first for Puerto Rico. But essentially this says that vessels that are not U.S. certified can help out in the relief effort. That's essentially what, when you waive the, because the act says only U.S. certified ships can do this.
They have to be built in the U.S. and you can't accept anything that's put on a ship from a foreign country. It all has to be from the mainland.
And this was essentially to promote the merchant industry. And there's something to that. That's important to do. But in this case, especially when there's a disaster, that usually will get waived. But for whatever reason, for the first couple days, the U.S. stuck to their guns. And they said, no, we're not going to do it.
Yes, it took immense pressure from the public and from folks who are aware of what the Jones Act is. And those who know a bit about the history of Puerto Rico know its relationship to the United States and a lot of the policies that they have been subjected to because of their relationship to the United States. So the Jones Act is one of those things. It took a lot of public pressure for people saying, look, we need to waive it. This is a disaster of epic proportions. And finally, they did so.
Amara, I mean, I guess the elephant in the room is the response from the White House. Because the White House will come out and say, we've responded well, we, you know, gave great reviews, we're doing so much. You've heard now I think it was San Juan mayor came out and said, no, this is not working for us. We're getting close to, what he said, genocide mm-hmm. territory with food and water. I mean, where are we with the fact that I don't want to say a political mishap. But has it been a difficult thing for the White House relations?
You can absolutely call it a political mishap because not 20 minutes ago, the Washington Post reported that for the first 4 days of this, well, not the first 4 days, when it initially happened, the administration was on it. And then for 4 days, Trump was golfing in New Jersey and no one talked about it. This isn't tonight's Washington Post. No one spoke about Puerto Rico at all. When he finally figured out on Monday that it was a problem because he was watching it on TV. That's when he decided, oh, I got to do something. This is clearly to me. I'm not speaking for Amara or you or anybody. For me, you're welcome. This seems to be to me his Katrina. And this is worse than Katrina.
Yeah.
And also, when you really look at the way that they rolled out for Houston, the way they rolled out for Louisiana and for Florida, and what they attempted to try to do with Puerto Rico, and then 4 days of golfing, where he was concentrating on North Korea, preparing a speech for Alabama, where he would bring the NFL to the focus when nobody was worried about the protests or the NFL too much. This is just another sign of an administration that does not have their alphabet in order.
Katrina,
if you know what I mean.
A little bit of it took time for people to recognize how bad the president at that point, George W. Bush, and his White House responded to that. I mean, we saw the terrible images at the time, people on the roofs, help me, things of that nature. But you really didn't get a sense when you look back in history now, you go, that was a terrible. I mean, is it too early to say that Puerto Rico, because of the destruction, despair, and the reaction from the White House, that this is a Katrina kind of disaster?
Well,
politically.
It might be early to tell. I don't know. And this is largely because the president seems to have been able to avoid a lot of what should be career-ending or catastrophic moves on their part. So I don't know that he'll get the level of backlash as President Bush did during Katrina. I know that his initial statements in Puerto Rico were just, they were so disconnected.
A lot about debt and Wall Street.
Debt, yeah. Wall Street, infrastructure. It was just, it was as though there was no empathy there, there was no understanding. And so Puerto Rico was, to me, treated as the stepchild, which I think they have been because of the way that the United States, the relationship that they have with the United States. And I think his comments reflected that. I don't know, though, that he will suffer any long-term damage from his handling of this issue.
The other story, and we'll get to it a lot tonight, so we don't have to dwell right now, but I mean, we were kind of divided. The NFL protests, of course. I mean, it landed in every category. I mean, every category, winners, losers, overreported, underreported. I mean, it really is something that is may not be important necessarily, but it's pervasive, meaning that everybody loves to talk about it. It's a wedge issue, and it deals with the third rail race.
I think everybody should really be focusing on the sudden caring on the part of the NFLPA and the players and the owners after Donald Trump said what he said. They had a year to back Colin Kaepernick up. He has a union that really has not backed him up at all. He's a member in good standing with the NFLPA. Damaris Smith should be ashamed of himself running a union that does not protect their members. The protest, the kneeling, the standing, the kneeling, I felt like I was at Mass at St. Carthage. Stand, kneel, sit. Stand, kneel, sit. Kneel, stand, sit. Sit, stand, kneel. Why? Nobody is doing it for the original reason.
Right.
Nobody has paid any attention to the fact that Colin Kaepernick, not only does he not have a job, but T.J. Yates, Dan Orlovsky, Mike, the Ginger Giraffe Glennon, is playing in the NFL. And a man that went to a Super Bowl with a decent arm and a pretty good record on him can't get a job.
All right. Let's take a break. No. We're going to get into it. I only say all right because let's take a break to stay on time because we're going to get – I know that we're going to talk about – I want to talk about 312-981-7200. Mario Smith, Amara Enya reloading this week's news. We'll come back and we'll start with winners and losers. Stay with us. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200, if you want to get in the action. What a tremendous week for stories that involve race and racism. I mean, really, let's Amara Enya, Mario Smith in studio. But on the winners category, we're just kind of discussing as we get into it. Obviously, you could make an argument that the NFL is both winner and loser in the, mm-hmm. in the protest. They were, I will say, I'll give them extreme credit. I'll put them in my winner category. I also have them in the losers category. But the NFL, to take an opportunity where they see an opportunity, meaning that has been bad publicity with Colin Kaepernick and even Donald Trump, but to take that opportunity, parlay it into locking arms, hashtags, unity, sponsors, whatever it might be, they essentially changed the narrative. The now everybody, you almost feel like they're locking arms so no one can get down on one knee. And
right.
And there's something to be said about the fact that they changed it from unity is more important than the actual issues that were being protested in the first place.
Right. Yeah, and I see that as a good thing and a bad thing. So one is that the original intent behind the protest, behind Kaepernick's protest, I think has been obscured. I think it's been conflated with disrespect for the flag, with all of these symbolic things that were not the point of why he started the protest. So we moved away from that as people started to focus on, well, who's patriotic and who's not patriotic. And so it just kind of obscured the point.
Yeah.
Then Trump, I think, presented an opportunity for the NFL to become vocal, but they became vocal in a different way. It wasn't vocal in the sense that we believe he has the right to express himself, and we also believe that people should be treated with dignity and people should not be abused by the police, etc. It became, we're going to stand together. And it's like, okay, stand together against what? When you did see some of the people who were locking arms with people who were actually vocal against Kaepernick, which mm-hmm. to me was odd.
Yeah, and it all started, you know, even at the beginning of the week, if you think about it, and probably the most, and it isn't a comical story, there's a lot on the line with this, but the most comical part to me was the Steeler, this was on Sunday, the Steeler offensive guard who stands by himself,
yeah.
and everyone rallies around this guy saying he wouldn't let the Steelers do this, that, and the other, you know, he went out, and then he comes out the next day and he's like, nah, I just kind of got caught between the color guard and the flags. and my team, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I made a huge mistake. Like he's just like it was a logistical issue. I mean, that's where you're just like, what is happening here with the media and how we're all kind of going crazy.
You know what I think,
protest.
Man? I think at some point everybody needs to do a couple things. Read the flag codes because we've been blowing that. If you got paper plates and napkins or a bikini or gloves or a hat or a scarf or a shirt with the American flag on it, you're breaking the flag code, so you're disrespecting the flag. When they present the flag at football games horizontally, it should never be presented that way. You're disrespecting the flag. If you're talking
if you
about
get into
if you
want to
really talk
flag,
about what disrespecting the flag is, those I just named half
last,
the codes.
Last night when they were doing the national anthem on the Packers game, they were making a big deal about it, of course. They had to show everybody and they show all the fans. There's one guy in Green Bay who was very USA about it, and he had his hat on.
Yeah, he had a hat on.
And I'm like, I was taught at an early age, you take the hat off. So I'm like, no one, what is happening?
Nobody, I think what everybody should do right now, for real, if you really like, first of all, if you're an NFL football fan, this is the worst week of your life because none of it was about football. I haven't watched a game for a lot of different reasons.
You're
not just
Bears
Colin
fan.
Kaepernick. I'm a
Bears
super,
fan.
I yeah, love I know, the Chicago I know, Bears, I even though they stink. I love them. I can't bring myself to watch a product that willingly pays rapists and people who body slam their women on guns and who beat women. I can't keep watching it. I have a hard time supporting an organization that supports that, but won't support a guy who is through a peaceful protest saying there's a problem in our country. Yeah. And I'm using my platform and my celebrity to put a focus
on there's something to be said, Namara. There is something to be said that there already has been a pretty liberal movement to boycott the NFL, whether
Absolutely.
It be Colin Kaepernick or the issues involved.
Yeah.
And now Donald Trump has created a conservative movement to boycott the NFL. This is where I'd put them in the loser category.
It's
where
like watching
we can all get, we can all come together on this in despising the NFL.
Right. I mean, I thought it was interesting because it was a boycott of the boycott of the NFL.
Yeah.
But again, it was just the bigger issue for me was that the whole point of the protest was obscured. And so we had in Chicago a couple of incidents where you had the one with the two police officers that stood in solidarity or kneeled in solidarity with an activist. And that was it was a powerful photo that a young activist
and
took.
And the police said,
police
no,
officers.
You can't do that.
Precisely. But then you also had that other police officer who had the American flag out, had a
sign.
Around,
yep.
And
a well-crafted sign.
How he's proud of America. It was almost a counter protest.
And he
to
couldn't
that
do
image.
That.
Yeah.
I mean, the police, I will give the police a win. I'll give the Chicago police
for
a win for consistency because they couldn't, because the only thing that I reading today that the police officer who did the flag stuff, he says that he lost his second job. He said he's been persecuted in certain ways. And if that's true, that's absurd. The idea that he's in uniform and says he wants to support the flag should be as respected as someone who is
doesn't
in uniform and doesn't want
I
to.
I agree.
I find it so strange that someone would lose a job over a job that had nothing to do with that because of that. So I want to make that clear that no one's asking for that to happen. But in terms of being in uniform for a taxpayer job like being a Chicago Police Department, you got to ride be objective in political statements. Either way can happen.
Well, this is the times we live in, though. Look at who the guy's in charge. The dude that's in charge started all of this in Alabama for nothing. He had no reason to start any of this stuff.
See, I will say, you know, we've talked about, Pete and I have talked about it, too, and I've said it a couple times in this week. It's the greatest hits for him.
Oh, yeah,
He's been talking about Colin Kaepernick on the campaign. When he gets in front of an audience in Alabama and he wants to go back to campaign mode, he can't talk about Obamacare because he failed.
Yeah.
He can't talk about Hillary's lying emails because now his guys are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
He can't talk about any other issues that are tax reform. Nothing has been done.
Right.
So he goes into his bag of tricks and he pulls out something that really he has nothing to do with it, which is just, I want to throw my opinion out about something.
Right.
And so you can understand, this is a greatest hits. This is not, I mean, he does it because he knows it riles up the people that are in front of him. He's a showman.
He knows his base.
And
we
also know that there are two Trumps behind a microphone. There's teleprompter Trump and there's pants around my ankles Trump. Pants around my ankles Trump is going for it every time he opens his mouth. Teleprompter Trump is very much sticking to the script. He says what he has to say and then he leaves. That other guy, though, is the guy that's in Alabama talking crazy.
Yeah.
That's the guy that's saying, okay, I'm sure at some point before this impeachment or whatever's going to happen to him happens, he'll say something about the space program.
Okay, so we've gotten our NFL stuff out. I have more to say. Here's my last point on it because I didn't get a chance to say it earlier today with Adam Hoge. Maybe, because Trump loves to talk about ratings. For whatever reason, he thinks that we care about ratings. You know, I saw the ratings. Nobody mm-hmm. cares about ratings. The idea that the football ratings are down might have something to do with the fact that the teams in New York, Chicago, L.A., San Francisco are all terrible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're not even good. I mean, they're like they're the worst they've ever been. The Jets, mm-hmm. the Giants. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, there's something to be said that the big markets in this sport are terrible. Yeah, so yeah. It's just kind of a coincidence. Mario Smith, I finally got that in. I've been waiting to say that. I give that to my brother. He brought that up to me. It's like,
good.
Ratings of course are down. Have you seen Mike Glennon and the Chicago Bears?
Right.
All right, we'll talk about losers coming up here on The Download. Amara Anya, Mario Smith, 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. Mario's a big fan, by the way.
Velvet Fog, baby.
He loves the Velvet Fog.
Well, we convene the Mutual Admiration Club. I'm a big fan of Mario's as
Thank you. That's what I'm talking about.
312-981-7200-269 says, will our toasters and microwaves be watching to see if football fans at home are standing for the national anthem? That's next.
Lord,
and then they'll tell Trump on us.
Right,
that's what he says. Right.
Right.
Oh, no.
So there's a lot. It's so true. You know, at a certain point, you're not sure what's going to happen here.
Yeah.
There was, I don't know where it went. I lost it somewhere in here, but there was one. I agree with the message about the NFL protest, 406 saying, I agree with the message. I just don't agree with the stage. The players are acting like kids because their parents said, don't do this. And there might be disagreement there. The idea that can people agree with the message that yes, America is right now in a place where African Americans, there's injustices against them, especially when it comes to relationships with the police, police brutality, and not have it play out this way on the stage in front of a football game.
I just think it's interesting how this effort to determine what is a proper form of protest. I mean, the whole point of protest is to disrupt. It is to call attention to a particular issue or issues and to do it in a way that makes people uncomfortable because the goal is to change the status quo. So this idea, this is a peaceful protest. It is done according to the ways that all the people who typically like to police protest would want it to be done. And now people have so many issues with how a protest is done.
Well, Trevor Noah on The Daily Show was tremendous on this issue where he said, I guess the bottom line, it can't be Black Lives Matter, it can't be NFL protests. So I guess the bottom line is if you're black, you can't protest.
Right.
And basically, secondly, and I also heard the stat right at the beginning of the week, which I thought was really telling, that it was, I forgot the poll, and I was here on WGN, but a stat that was done at the time in 1966, where with Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, there was a 60-plus disapproval rating at the time in this country for that speech, not for the civil rights movement, but for that speech in specific.
Yes.
And people were like, I don't agree with what he's saying. He shouldn't have said it. That should not be up there. And history has obviously proven that otherwise, but it is interesting to think that, you know, when you're in the moment, things are a lot different than the way history is going to look at it 30
years. The March on Washington, the Selma, in Selma, all of the Rosa Parks, these things were not accepted and people weren't welcoming these forms of protest with open arms. I think in the sanitized version of history that we have, people just assume that everyone loved Martin Luther King when he was giving his I Have a Dream speech. When the contrary was actually true. And so in this moment, of course, people are not going to like the protest because it makes them uncomfortable. But we have to be careful not to denigrate the actual protest because that's absolutely necessary for any of the change that we want.
How about if the cops stop killing my people, we won't have to protest?
Well, I mean, that's
you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I get. But
how about if we get some equality and equanimity in this bad boy?
Equanimity.
You won't have to. Yeah, you won't have to worry about people protesting. It's really, really as simple as that. If the footing was equal for everybody for real, and we could get past our own personal nonsense, none of this would be happening. And then everybody can have their season tickets and not burn their jerseys.
Well, I do agree. I mean, the NFL and. I believe it is a good platform because a lot of people watch it.
What better platform?
Yeah.
Is
I mean, what else are you
do
it?
What do people
call a press
want?
Conference in the basement of the Illinois Center?
That's what I'm saying.
You know,
what do people want us to do?
And there's a long history of athletes in protests. Anyway, let's move on.
We've talked about the NFL.
All right, let's talk about the loser category. Let's talk about Governor Rauner. We have him in the we have President Trump in the loser category, and not necessarily about his policies or any of the stuff that happened, but what a tough week for him. Tom Price out today, Health and Human Services. Really interesting about a guy who really had talked about he really spent a career railing on that the government is spending too much money on health care, and we should be he led the charge to repeal, and to find out that he's abusing taxpayer money with chartered flights and other things, that's the one we're just like, oh
yeah.
Another bad story for him was, of course, the Affordable Care Act repeal didn't happen. This was supposed to happen this week. It didn't happen. Didn't
Third
get enough
time.
That feels like that story was a month ago, but that was at the beginning of this week. And, of course, just backlash on Puerto Rico. The other losers, though, Governor Rauner, and this is a really interesting story politically, locally. He signed the bill HB 40, a bill that essentially gives protections to women for abortions. If in case the Supreme Court or the federal government ever decides to change Roe v. Wade, right. And and also to be able to keep it on Medicare, but the that's really the crux of it. Early on this summer, the governor promised to repeal or not repeal the veto or to do a mandatory veto to conservative groups, to the Catholic Church, to others. Yesterday, he comes out in a conference and says, you know what? I'm going to sign it. People are really passionate about this. I'm going to sign it. So a win for Democrats who crafted the bill and put it through the General Assembly, but a loss for conservatives who backed their Republican governor, and they are livid.
Yeah. Upset.
Livid.
Hot.
I think so part of the issue with Rauner is that, and I think the Republicans have sort of accepted this at this point, is that he came in and he was never your traditional Republican. So he never had sort of a hardcore Republican conservative ideals that he stood upon. So now that he's in office and he's done something like this, I think this is sort of the straw that broke the camel's back, if you will, for conservatives, because they're seeing that this isn't someone who we can trust to stand up on our core values. But he never came in as a core values Republican. He always came in as a businessman that wanted to shake up Springfield.
And he's had a lot of people around him, the Illinois Policy Institute, and others that have, even in his staff, that have wanted him to go more conservative, wanted him to dig in on some of the budget stuff, and he hasn't been able to go there. A lot of conservatives want to put a primary candidate up. You saw a lot of people yesterday step up last night, this morning, today, saying, hey, I'll run. We need to do this. Is that a serious threat? I mean, Amar, you've been in Illinois politics. Is that a serious threat to be concerned if you're the governor?
I think it is a serious threat. I don't know if that's the best move for the Republicans to make at this point, especially with how the Democratic candidates have lined up. What this does is it hurts the Republican Party generally, and I think it actually creates more opportunity for the suite of gubernatorial candidates on the Democratic side to come out even stronger if he is primaried.
It's tough. I mean, you're essentially, it's politics 101.
Yeah.
And Mario, what people don't, this is a bill and a law, and now a law, but at the time, HB 40 was a bill that was crafted by Democrats to put him in this position, because this is not something that goes into effect right away and changes the lives of Illinoinians. This is something that is just if something happens down the road with the Supreme Court, we are promising as a state of Illinois to protect those rights. This is all about getting the governor on record. I mean, it is a masterful stroke of
really
political
is.
Strategy by Mike Madigan and the Democrats.
You got to give the Dems credit for thinking ahead.
I'm a little annoyed by it.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like, thanks for wasting time on. And I'm not saying that the issues in it are wasting
time.
No,
absolutely.
They're important issues, but it's just sort of like, this is what we're doing in General Assembly. Do the budget.
But here's the thing, man. Yeah. They can't do the budget. So they have to, it's just like the Trump administration. They can't do Obamacare proper. So what they're going to do is go, well, we'll do tax reform. The Illinois legislature cannot do the budget. So what they'll do is everything else that might be make people happy and keep people, you know, generally interested in what's going on in the state. The bottom line is Mayor Rauner can't win for losing. So even him signing this bill, which in effect is not a bad bill, it's not the worst thing, it's not maybe the best, but it's not the worst. He has put himself in a position where he has to be called out for that. And
darned if you do, darned
if you don't. And if the Republicans are trying to find another candidate to run against him, he may be like, go ahead and do it.
He's got a ton of money.
I think
he's fine.
I think the Democratic strategy money-wise, is to, anyway. Because they know that on their side, they have the burden of being the status quo. We know we've got the Speaker of the House who's been there forever. A lot of the problems in the state have existed with the Democratic structure as it is. And so I think that they have seen their opportunity is to erode Republican support for the Republican governor, as opposed to the contrasting the Republicans versus the Democrats.
Right.
And so they're trying to erode his base of support
on that side. Do you think that works? Do you think that strategy in the long run's going
to
work?
No. I don't think so, because I think you have to, if you're on the Democratic side, you need to put forth a vision for the state of Illinois and solve some of these issues in the state of Illinois,
you would think.
And be willing to work on those issues as opposed to pointing to the other guy to say why that person is scary or why we should be scared of them. And I think that's a strategy that they have used at the state level and at the national level. The Democrats nationally are too busy talking about why Trump is so horrendous instead of putting forth a clear and cohesive vision for what this country could be and a strategy to get there.
But this is also part of a disturbing trend that is taking place around the country and maybe around the world, too. You've got all these multimillionaire venture capitalists running for office and winning because they got money to pay for commercials. But when they get there, they're like, ooh, this job is tough. I don't really think I want to do this. And now it's like, yeah, dude, you're the governor of Illinois. This is what you said you wanted, because we've had a track record of governors who love going to jail. Apparently the pipeline is really working. And now here you are and you're like disinterested.
Well, I wonder though, and the state of Illinois was a blue state for Hillary Clinton, but it's also a red state downstate outside of Chicago. And Chicago right now with the Democrats is, it seems very much like 2016, where I don't think that there are Chicagoans right now that think that the Democrats in General Assembly have done a good job. And so you wonder, does a conservative movement that has not necessarily taken hold here in the state of Illinois, but if a conservative candidate comes in and challenges the governor, I mean, that usually is how primaries work out. More of the conservative, more of the, I don't want to say fringe, but more of the conservative or more of the liberal voters will come out. The moderates kind of stay home. Mm-hmm. Is there a chance that a good candidate come out? And this could be the moment for Illinois conservatives.
Who?
I don't know, but
you know
whoever it is, I mean, they didn't see a moment 2 days ago.
No, they didn't.
Now they're in a side where they're like, this is the window. The window's open. Let's go get it.
Yeah, and to actually energize the conservative base, a true conservative base that can be contrasted sharply with the Democrats. I think that there is an opportunity there.
But doesn't that put us right back to the whole Democrat versus Republican thing, as opposed to fixing the problems of the state and working on a budget and getting this right?
If you're a conservative Republican, you voted for Governor Rauner.
Yes, you did.
And you have seen a lot of the issues that you care about in this state, whether it be budgets, whether it be union, that's another story coming up here, whether it's abortion is always on that list, social issues, not gone your way.
Yeah.
Even school.
Yeah.
I mean, it went, CPS got what they, I mean, there has been a lot of fight and a lot of hand-wringing, a lot of deadlines, past deadlines, this and the other. But not a lot of wins.
Yeah.
So I could see a conservative Republican. If I were a conservative Republican, I'd be like, if there was a candidate I could get behind, I might get behind it.
But that candidate has to be able to woo the people downstate, because no matter what, how horrible it gets, I don't think there's a Democrat in Chicago that votes for a Republican governor.
Yeah.
Unless that governor's platform is going to please the people who live in the wards that are south of here and west of here.
Yeah. Well, on the other side, I was very interested to see that Chewy Garcia came out for Chris Kennedy.
Yeah.
And Susana Mendoza came out for J.B. Pritzker, which was a given. Susana Mendoza was the chair of the reelection campaign for Rahm Emanuel.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a surprise.
Right.
I think it's a little bit of a surprise. Chewy Garcia had a couple of candidates to choose from, whether it be Chris Kennedy or Daniel Biss or Amara Pewar.
Well,
I mean, there obviously were a lot of options there for him, but he went with Chris Kennedy.
Yeah, I don't think that this was an option after the whole debacle with Carlos Rosa and bringing him on. And I mean,
an option if he would have stayed with Carlos.
If he would have stayed with Carlos, it certainly would have been an option, and Biss would have had a more viable campaign. So I think that option was taken off the table. I don't think that Pewar was an option either, just because of his standing in the race. I think that Garcia is making the calculated choice about who has the resources that could perhaps be useful in the future, and also who has a likelihood of at least getting out of the primary.
Right. You're a progressive. You've always been a progressive, Mara.
Yes.
You ran on that platform
mm-hmm.
Back when for mayor. Is Chris Kennedy a progressive? I mean, is can he wear that badge? Can he take what the groundswell here in Chicago that went for Bernie Sanders, that went for progressive candidates, for went for Chuy Garcia, and be able to turn that out on Election Day?
I think he could, but it would depend on having a clear message and the policies that he puts forth. See, right now, the policies have been a little bit obscure. You don't really know where he stands on very much except for what he's talked about with taxes, tax policy, et cetera. But he would have to come out with a very strong and clear policy agenda, progressive policy agenda that he could speak to. That could help him move into the progressive camp. Right now, no one really knows where he is on the spectrum, except that he's a Democrat.
Do we know about any of those candidates, really, though? We know one thing, they got a lot of money. Right. And I also think Chewy's endorsement of Chris Kennedy says more about Chewy than it does about Chris Kennedy.
He's not a J.B. Pritzker guy.
And he's
right?
not a Pritzker guy, but you know, right. you got to also remember, Chewy is really going to do this mayor thing again. And if he does, as close as he came last time, he needs every bullet he can get in his chamber to win it. Rahm Emanuel's a tough candidate to beat. Why, I don't know. But he's apparently a very tough candidate to beat.
We were talking about, I was on Week in Review tonight, we were talking about in the web special about how Natasha Kerecki and Derek Blakely and Lester Munson, everyone agreed that there has been a turnaround for Rahm Emanuel. I mean, he went from citywide, everybody saying no after Laquan McDonald and that stuff. We were like out to a guy who's now the Trump foil. And we're all like, oh, well, good.
Here's what he did, in my estimation, that made it easy for people to not forget what has happened, but to kind of just like look at him and just to continue to watch him do. He stopped talking. There was a period where he just was, I'm not talking. I don't want to talk about
right,
anything.
I don't want to talk. Yeah,
if
right,
you see
right.
me somewhere,
smart. It's smart.
When you see me, you're going to see me doing mayoral stuff. But I'm not talking about anything.
But you know what else he did? So he definitely has Trump winning, I think, was a negative thing in terms of what he wanted to do, his exit strategy from Chicago. But I also think it was a positive because it gave him someone he could contrast himself with. He has this push for immigration, sanctuary cities, all of these things that he claims to care about now, which he didn't care about ten years ago. Now all of a sudden he's the biggest champion. And I think it's because he's making the calculated decision that he needs the Latino vote for whatever he wants to do afterward.
Right. Let's go back to Illinois governor, because mayor, you guys will be on again. We can talk about mayor.
Thank you.
African-American vote. Marilyn Katz came on the show. I even bring this up to the candidates that come in, but Marilyn said something that stuck with me. She said, there's no way to win as a Democrat in the state of Illinois if you don't get the black vote. Like, there's just no way around it. You can do all the math you want, but if you don't have it, you don't win. J.B. Pritzker, Chris Kennedy, two rich guys from downtown, white guys who have name recognition. I've heard that the Kennedy name, because it's Bobby Kennedy's son, plays more in the African-American community than maybe a Pritzker name. But is that just – I mean, who are black folk going to vote for?
Check it out. I'm going to help you.
Thank you, Mario.
Here's the deal. 9 out of 10 homes from the 70s to like maybe 85 had a picture of John F. Kennedy in their house. So everybody knows the Kennedy, Martin Luther King, you know, there's the triumvirate, and there's another one I can't think of right now. They're all in Abraham
Harold
Lincoln
Washington.
Or Harold Washington. Abraham Lincoln. They're all viable names in the community. Problem is with these two, everybody knows the name Pritzker because there's schools named after Pritzkers and they do great stuff in the community, charity, all that, but nobody knows them. And J.B. Pritzker, as slick as those commercials may be, it's going to be hard to make that play in South Shore.
All right, Chris Kennedy?
Nobody knows about Chris Kennedy.
But can he make the argument
son.
That he's Bobby Kennedy's son?
Yeah, but that doesn't reach now.
No?
You know what?
If this was 1983.
It would definitely reach 20 years ago, it would have reached. But now it's like, okay, so what? Are you going to use some of that Kennedy money to help us out, son? Because if you're not.
Amara, what do you think?
It's just interesting to me that I agree that the black vote is absolutely essential in any election to whomever's going to win. I would just love to see it be more than a symbolic token thing. Everyone was trying to grab a black lieutenant governor for a candidate to run with. You know, okay.
Everybody did.
It was a free-for-all, like, let's find a black woman.
Every Democrat right now has a lieutenant governor who's an African-American.
Yes. Yep. And that,
we
you know, that is, I get it. No, but I get it. But it's also a little bit insulting because there's a tokenism aspect to it.
Oh, for sure.
And when you look at the policies that they put forth and what their vision is for the city, for the state in this case, does it speak to issues that Black people would care about? Or is it just lip service and a token Black person in your campaign to win people over?
It's almost like Back to the Future when Mayor Woody, he was in a soda shop and nobody knew. And then boom. That's
the mayor. You know what I'm saying? All right. Before, because we only got 2 minutes until we hit the break here. But the other loser I had was college basketball.
Oh,
and yeah. this also could be a story that, you know, just got kind of glossed over a little bit. It was a big sports story. But Rick Pitino fired in Louisville. But the FBI investigation, a criminal investigation, is into essentially paying families hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Absolutely.
To play their one and done. If you're a high school kid who knows you're going to the NBA and you want to play 1 year at a big school, to that they are giving those families money for them to come and spend their 1 year at the university. What is that? There's so much just popping off in my head about that. But it also stems to the idea that this is a huge money-making industry for colleges and universities, and yet, you know, criminal investigations call out that the thing they're not supposed to do, they're doing, because it is totally unfair. They should be getting paid.
It is past time for the NCAA to find the way to share the wealth. Those kids go there, whether it's a year or 4 years, and they make campuses like Louisville rich. If you've ever been in Louisville, Kentucky, and been past their campus, they got brand new facilities all over the highway. That's money. If I'm a family member, I've got a son that's 7 foot one that can handle the ball in the paint and got a jumper and not afraid to play some defense, and you come at me with $100,000 and I don't have any money, I'm probably going to be prone to take that money.
Quickly, Amara, should they pay athletes? Should they not pay? I mean, is this is obviously wrong, where the standard that we're in right now, but what's your take? I mean, I play the devil's advocate here. Should they not? I mean, they shouldn't.
Well,
right?
You know, it depends, because think about what sports would get paid and which ones wouldn't. So is it only football and basketball, because those are the popular sports where they would pay the athletes? What about the track athletes? What about the volleyball players?
Right.
How would you parse that out about which athletes are able to get paid and which ones don't?
I'd pay the ones that are on TV. The other ones, too bad for you. You play volleyball, good.
Maybe you
good.
Figured it out, Mario. Maybe it's a percentage of at ratings and advertising that come off of TV. I don't know.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. You make sure that they all are scholarship tight, and you make sure that they all have stipends for food. They don't have to worry about getting a job, that they can eat, they can live. Yeah. That you take care of them. Is
all right,
what
let's
you do.
Already do that. They did, yeah, and here's the thing. Let's wrap. I would also say, yeah, and they're also getting free education. So that's going to be the other side of the coin. Is you're getting a free ride at Louisville. Basket weaving to play basketball. Mario Smith. They are in studio with us, reloading
my basket.
We'll come back. Overreported, underreported, and which stories sucked us down the rabbit hole this week? 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We are reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. Mario Smith and Amara Enya in studio.
Let's go.
Ready to go.
Yeah. Fired up.
847 Woo! Says, hey, you can pay the college athletes if you make them pay for their tuition. That's exactly what I was saying there at the end. 708 says, as an Orthodox Catholic, Rauner just lost my vote. If that means a Democrat wins, so be it. This is about HB 40.
More people are feeling their way than we're probably going to put a number on. I bet you.
There's something there. Said 773 says the 68 Olympics when it comes to protests and athletes.
Muhammad Ali, right. Jim Brown before he lost his mind.
Carlos,
right. Yeah. And then there's a Mexico point here, 68. And this is one I'll talk to you guys about. We'll do real quick. You know, Mario, you kind of ignited a little bit of a storm.
Don't I always?
When you said, you know, stop killing black people.
Yeah, that would be, there you go.
And someone says, stop.
I bet they said black on black crime, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. You're exactly right.
Of course. You know why?
We won't have to protest. Shame on you. There's more blacks killed by blacks than anyone else in the country.
You're
going to generalize that all police is bad when it's really just less than 1% of police.
How about this? Go to your Google and look up the Guardian's report of how many people in the United States got killed by police, and tell me how many of those people were white.
And also, we have to really hammer home the fact that every group, every racial or ethnic group has the higher likelihood of the violence being within that group. So you can talk about white on white.
I was going to say, we don't talk about white on white crime.
But Hispanic on Hispanic.
I would also say that in the argument, though, is that the biggest issue, it's not a violence issue. It's an issue of taxpayer-funded police officers.
State-sanctioned actors.
Yes. Doing this in a way that these are the actual people who keep the peace.
How about
the big difference between two, I don't want to be so crass, but two gangbangers on a street corner versus a police officer and a citizen.
How about the crimes cookie?
I get all the other stuff out of there, but that's what I mean.
How about the crimes Cookie committed against Bose back in the day? Those were crimes. Did anybody talk about that? No.
Clown crimes?
Yeah, nobody said anything about Cookie taking from Bozo.
All right.
Give me a
there
break.
There we go. Good way to wrap that up.
Stop it. Playing games.
All right, let's go
to
underreported. This is a, you had a great one, Amara, an international story that we haven't heard much about, but an independence story. And we usually love these stories, right?
Yeah, well, usually. So I have been following I've actually been following the Kurds for years. So this is a group, it's an ethnic minority group in Iraq, in Iran, and several of other of those countries who have for decades been pushing for independence. And so finally this week, they had an independence vote. But it was done against a lot of pressure from the governments in Turkey, the governments in Iran, the governments in Iraq, to try to intimidate them from taking this
They're
vote.
They're an oppressed people. It came up in the war in Iraq that the Kurds were not, I mean, there was the Sunnis and the Shiites and the Kurds.
Yes.
And there was, they were always sort of always put off in a corner. They were given the northern part of Iraq. So they want out of, they want to be independent.
Yes.
But the actors in the Middle East, they don't want this.
They do not. So they have been marginalized, sort of like the Roma in Europe. They have been marginalized for eons. And now the governments of these countries have been really trying to intimidate. They have military personnel, I think, at the border in Iraq. The president in Turkey was very, just the language that they were using trying to intimidate to stop this vote from happening, even though it was, for all intents and purposes, a symbolic vote. But what it does is it establishes a precedent and makes the likelihood of independence all that like much more possible than it seemed in previous years. Yeah. So this is a huge, huge development.
It's a good story, and I'm reading a book right now, Wendy Perlman, political science professor at Northwestern. She's going to be on the show soon.
Nice.
About Syria. And it's really interesting to sort of play out that a lot of this is about, you know, different factions of different parts of the Middle East kind of going against each other.
Who's in ISIS, who's not in ISIS. It is.
And the ISIS guy came back, too. ISIS dude came back from the Russian dead. Did you see that?
I did not see
He came out of the Russian affirmament, and he's back. ISIS is back, and ISIS so is Kim Jong-un. Are you ready for
Rocket Man?
Rocket Man.
All right, so let's keep going here. The other story that we all agreed on was underreported, which is hard, I mean, unbelievably hard to believe, is repeal and replace. Yeah. Yeah. Didn't happen. This kind of played out in a way that if you saw the last, I was riveted. I came home this last time when they had the vote with Mitch McConnell, and I went home, watched C-SPAN 2 for the first time in my life. the ratings were through the roof. This one, I'm like, meh. I mean, but I wonder how much that plays into the lawmakers' hands as they continue this, is that there is a little bit of fatigue from citizens calling congressmen and senators about repeal and replace, that one of these is actually going to stick because people aren't paying attention.
They keep trying. They keep, bless their hearts, they got to have a win somewhere because we were promised winning, like continual winning where we would be like, please stop winning. So they go for the one thing that they can't win on continuously over and over and over again. And we had this conversation, you and I, Mr. Kaufman, where you were like, I know you're a Democrat because you want universal health care. And now I'm going to say it again. Wouldn't it have been easier for them to just say, let's rethink the parts of this bill that doesn't work, the stuff that doesn't work about Obamacare?
Well, that's what they need to do, and they're trying to do in the bipartisan way. And that's all John McCain. Senator McCain has became a liberal hero.
Basically.
But, that's all he's saying. He's not saying he likes it. He wouldn't repeal and replace it either,
right.
He's saying, let's go back to the order of which we're supposed to govern in the Senate as opposed to this reconciliation.
But at some
point,
you're going to have to find a model that works somewhere outside of the United States and say, can this work here?
Well,
and really be strident about changing. If you're going to change it, change
but it. But I challenge the Democrats on that because we had an opportunity to push for a single-payer system, and we did not stand on the courage of any convictions.
Yeah.
And so what we ended up with is Obamacare, which was vulnerable to being challenged. So if we're going to talk about if we're going to be all in, then let's be all in. The Democrats could have gone all in to get the kind of healthcare system that we deserve, and they didn't.
There's something to be said about compromising with majority party, meaning they had the votes to be able to pass the Affordable Care Act, but you are absolutely right. They could have gone for what they
wanted
at the core of, yes. of the Democratic Party, the single-payer system. Yes. They didn't.
They didn't.
They kind of, in a weird way, compromised themselves
exactly.
out of it. Right?
Exactly. Well, that's my question.
That's politics.
Right on, Senator Enya.
Amara Enya, Mari Call Smith it. In studio. All right, here, we'll take a break. Come back. We'll talk about which stories took us down the rabbit hole and which stories will be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from this week.
Whew.
It's the Download or Reload the News. Stay with us. Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're reloading this week's news. Some good stuff here tonight.
Pete Zimmerman's jamming.
He really is. He does all it live.
I know.
Yeah, he's got a sound. He's got an 808 drum back
he's
there.
He's got an 808 on sometimes, or a nice guitar. He's just jinga 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 jinga.
Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news. We're to the point where we talk about the stories that took us down the rabbit hole. I kind of stole your Iraqi Kurds story, Amara, but one story that I saw that I think we could talk about is a big story that's actually previewing next week, and that's that the United States Supreme Court is back in session coming up on Monday, and they have agreed the slate of cases that they have agreed to listen to or to I don't know what the word is
to hear
mm-hmm. yeah are pretty startling, and there are a lot of big issues in this society, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been on record saying this has the this could be the most momentous session in Supreme Court history. And the first one, Bruce and Governor Rauner has a big stake in this, is that this was the union lawsuit that was filed when he first started that went in, and he said that it is unfair that people who aren't in unions or don't want to be in unions but work a union job have to pay the fees.
Yeah.
Essentially, this is a way to cut off the head, to take resources away from unions so they can't use it for political activity and support Democratic causes, right?
Yes.
That's really what he's doing here.
Yep.
And it went to a certain point, and they said, you're the governor of Illinois. It's inappropriate for you to be on this lawsuit. It's been thrown out. But somebody picked it up, and they've been able to, by being a state worker, move it through the system, and the Supreme Court has agreed to hear this case. On paper, this issue got to the court at one point or another before, and it was a 4-4 stalemate because Scalia was gone, and it was 4-4.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore.
Gorsuch
starts. This will be his start, and this tips the court in conservatives' favor.
Yeah.
Will we see a 5-4 ruling on unions and dues and what they can take from union professionals?
Yes, I actually think that we will. I mean, this was the concern with this whole presidential election. It really came down to, for a lot of people, what was happening on the Supreme Court. A lot of significant cases that could change precedent in the country will be heard by this upcoming court. And Gorsuch, for all of what he talked about during his confirmation hearing, I do think he's going to end up siding with the other traditionally conservative justices. This union issue is huge. This could change the political landscape in a way that we haven't had since Citizens United several years ago.
And frankly, what's at stake, and the unions will say that, and there is something to be said. If you don't believe that it's a political mouthpiece or that any dues are used for political activity, let's just say that that's the cynics in all of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're using the money for, and you can make that argument. But just on its basis, the idea that you could benefit from collective bargaining and other rights that are afforded to you as a union shop and not be a union member and pay those dues, it seems a little unfair. And I'm taking all politics and what's the money's being used for out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just on that, as human beings, as we look at that, I'm like, yeah, if everybody comes together and that's the idea, collective bargaining, and I get you more money, Mario, and I get you more money, Amara, and we all get together, but you didn't pay in the $200 to, and you didn't pay the, right. you know, and I did. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it really is getting to just the structure of unions generally. But I think the bigger concern for me is what this means for workers. I mean, there are patterns going on in companies right now where individuals who don't see the value of the union, so they don't want to pay into the union. But the very power of a union is in its people. It's in having as large a membership as possible. This is the very principle is the power of people over the power of money or the corporate interest or the CEO, so that there's some balance so that people don't get exploited. So this case would essentially gut unions. It would make it so that people, oh, well, I don't see the benefit, so they don't pay in. So then the unions weaken, fewer members, the collective bargaining declines. And then you have CEO to employee right. pay.
You can make a strong argument that this is what Governor Bruce Rauner yes. ran on and why he was voted into yes. office. I mean, you see the sort of same thing that happened in Wisconsin with Scott Walker. So yep. this is a big issue. The other one, which we haven't talked about in a while, and I think it's all cyclical, right, is religious liberty or religious freedoms. And that is up this time.
Oh,
and this
yeah.
is the
yeah.
this is the case of the cake in
the
Indiana
gay
that
cake.
You cannot. Yes. You cannot, you have the right, based on your religion, to not serve someone that you feel is immoral, essentially.
So
if you're a gay, lesbian, LGBT community, and you want to come in and have a gay wedding, you have the right as a bakery to say, my religion says that I don't believe in what you're doing. I don't have to serve you.
So that
and this is at the Supreme Court.
That ends up being in their favor in the conservatives' pot as well. This
yeah.
dude is into actually... to, in my estimation, to just undo everything that's been done until he dies.
Well,
so he's
at least
there.
At least they're consistent.
And they're consistent. And they're going to keep doing this.
That's
everything
what Trump
that comes
been doing.
Everything that comes up that has any inkling of being for the people, they will find a way to either water it down or dismiss it and get rid of it. So, you know, this is what America wanted. They wanted this clearly because 53% of white women said, I want Donald Trump. And Donald Trump was going to make sure that whatever Supreme Court dude was in there or woman was in there was going to definitely be a concern.
But you know what? Amara mentioned it. I mean, that's what the stakes of this election were.
Yeah.
To the victor go the spoils.
To the victor go the spoils.
Yeah. So this was what it was less about Hillary Clinton to some. They're saying this is just going to be a huge year.
Yeah.
But that issue is one that, I mean, that also can stir a lot of unrest in this country because gays have and gays and lesbians have gotten to a point where they have the right to be married, everything. We've moved socially in that direction to have a law on the books that the court of the land says, yeah, but I don't have to as a regular citizen recognize it.
So
or I don't have to get, I mean, we're back to the days of I don't like your color of your skin, so you can't get gas
exactly.
here. And I don't understand that at
it's
all.
I don't either.
It's a slippery slope, but you're seeing the backlash because of marriage equality passing, because of, I mean, these are things that have happened under the Obama administration that people have been stewing about and steaming about for years. And so this is part of that backlash. So it's a reverse.
And if you thought that the first two, the first two issues were big, or let me put it this way, if you thought the first two issues don't affect you, I don't really care about religious liberty. I don't really care about
Eating a gay cake.
Union, yeah, gay cakes or union dues. That none of doesn't affect me. The third one will, and it's digital privacy.
Yep.
Yes.
And it has a lot to do with whether or not corporations can use your data for other things. How are you? Is your search history yours, and no one can say this is going to the Supreme Court.
Yes.
And conservatives usually side with corporations.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot on the line for this coming up U.S. Supreme Court session.
Yeah.
I'm very interested to see what happens here, Fall. Yeah?
Same here.
There's
same
also
here.
A lot of corporations that don't want that, too. Your Googles and your Twitters. And your,
tweeters.
You know, although Twitter and Facebook got their own issues right now. But, yeah, this should be interesting. It'll be a nice lesson for everybody. So buckle up, gang. If I can do my Mike
right.
Dicker. Get ready, gang.
Get ready.
Buckle up, gang.
See that? That's your IQ, zero.
That's your IQ, buddy, zero. Get ready, gang.
Get your mouth shut.
All right. You know?
All right. We're not doing any dick.
Come on, gang.
All right. As we wrap up here, Amara Enyon, Mario Smith in studio tonight. Let's do our final category, which is which story will be remembered in history from this week, 5 years from now, 6 months from now, 10 years from now, 5,500 years. I'll be in the caves when the planet recycles and we're at a point where we're back to being caves. It'll be like, what is this hieroglyphic?
What was this WGN?
September 26, 2017.
Right.
What do you got?
I have Puerto Rico. I think the tragedy in all of this is that there are 3.5 million Americans on that island, and not one of them asked for this. I think if you have any kind of heart. And it, I feel a way about it, you know, because I remember people in New Orleans talking about drinking plastic water, the water FEMA provided for them. Yeah. I remember how that felt to watch people coming from New Orleans to Chicago, literally scared to death, like just frightened about whatever their future was going to be. I will say this, too. I think part of this with the Puerto Rico story is that you've got a bunch of Puerto Ricans that are going to be coming to the mainland that are upset with Donald Trump, and they're going to turn some states around wherever they end up, Florida, Illinois, wherever. They're going to be upset for a while.
Beyond political.
I mean, beyond the political part of that.
But just awful.
If I could just real quick, Pallets and Planes, go to generosity.com and look at Pallets and Planes. They need satellite phones and they need people on the ground to deliver all this stuff. All the supplies are getting there, but they have no way to get them to the people. So there's that.
All right. Amara, what do you got? What story is going to be remembered?
So initially I was thinking the hieroglyphic would be Kaepernick's afro. And
yes. On a knee. Kneeling. Right, for the kneeling. Man. Stop doing man type stuff.
So I think that will be definitely remembered. That was like the image that flashed into my mind. But I also think that how the situation in Puerto Rico was handled is something that will be remembered. So we still haven't seen the full fallout from the storm and the response. So I think that's something that will be remembered. So I have to kind of put those on par. But I think the Kaepernick hieroglyphic will definitely be
my story that everyone's going to remember is the week that Dwayne Wade left Chicago.
Bye. Peace. Be easy, bro.
We'll all be like in 500 years. Remember Dwayne Wade? He played that 1 year.
See you, man.
In Chicago, where he was just seems okay.
I'll holler at you at a charity event, son. Be well.
Nice. He had a nice sport coat with no sleeves.
Right. Bye.
Look good.
Good luck. Have fun in Cleveland.
Mario Smith, Amara Enya, breaking down this week's news, reloading this week's news. Always a pleasure. We'll see you guys in a little bit. I mean, you got to come back.
Hey, man, as long as Chicago Blackhawk hockey is not interfering with us coming back.
We'll be back. We should
all go
books.
To a game.
Yeah, love to.
I'm with it.
All right, let's do it.